From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 21st day of August 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo at GlobalCommResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions will be here to discuss the agricultural weather forecast. And we'll wrap up this week by talking with Brian Grady, the editor of the Pro Farmer newsletter, about the Midwest Crop Tour and the national yields that Pro Farmer just released. It was a much lower corn yield than USDA has in its tally for the August crop production report. We'll hear all about that today on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn today up 2.5 cents, settled at 327. December at 340.5, a penny and a quarter higher, and the March up 3/4 at 353. September soybeans down 1/4 at $9.75. November at 904.75, a half lower, and the January down 0.5 at 911.25. Bean oil up 11 cents. Bean meal down 360 for the day. Wheat futures soft red July up 5.25. Settlement price at 546.75, and hard red July at 482.5, up 4.5 cents. Live cattle futures about $1.22.5 lower for the day. The feeder cattle were off around 97.5 cents, and lean hogs finished 92.5 cents lower on the afternoon. Some of the other numbers that we'll get to a bit later, but I want to talk with Mike Zuzulo at GlobalCommResearch.com about, come from Pro Farmer, where they put an average national yield on the United States corn at 177.5 bushels to the acre. That's well below the 181.8 USDA had in August, and at 52.5 bushels to the acre for their soybeans, which is still a pretty good-sized record, but below what USDA was thinking in August. Mike, what'd you think of those numbers when you first saw them?
You know, I felt like, Todd, that this is one of the first years in several that I can remember where the Twitter feeds, the road trip updates, the sheets that they take pictures of as they progress through the tour really matched up with the final number at the end of the week. Because oftentimes, in my memory, we have had talk and chatter and conversation along the Pro Farmer Tour during the week in different states that this corn or these beans are not coming along as well as they should. And the anecdotal evidence would suggest that they were going to be below USDA. But then when the final numbers come out, they're about the same as USDA if you factor in how to read the Pro Farmer numbers as far as being a percentage above or below the prior year, kind of like the USDA using their own numbers above or below a percentage versus the prior year. This year, the anecdotal evidence matched up with the final number, which also matched up with what clients have been telling me the last 2 or 3 weeks, and it kind of helps explain the USDA numbers being so high, that the crop has gone backwards in the last 2 weeks pretty substantially, that the MODIS NDVI satellite imagery probably was not relied upon as heavily by USDA as the farmer surveys as of August 1st. And so I feel like this is a really accurate number, a very real-time number, and it matches. I'm not just saying that because it matches up almost perfectly with my national yield of 177.7, and that could come down depending on the next 2 weeks of rainfall or no rainfall. But it really takes you back to a 2.5 billion bushel carryover, which is a large number domestically, but it really tightens you up globally. As far as the beans, no arguments whatsoever. I think we're probably closer to the Pro Farmer low number of 51.1, I believe it was, on the range. I'm actually still a little bit below 50 bushels. I feel good about that with what I'm hearing in the fields right now. But the beans are much more wide open and much more susceptible to welcome rains from the tropics and these two systems sitting out in the Caribbean.
Will USDA come to this number eventually, and how fast will that happen?
Well, I think it goes back to how much USDA cuts the harvested acres in September in the states of Iowa and Illinois. Obviously, Iowa's the heart and soul of probably the majority of the acreage cut, but there was some probable damage and maybe crop insurance adjustments that need to be done in far western Illinois. And so you compare that in the September report to what Pro Farmer did in their tour final number. But I think other than that, you're probably going to have to wait, much like 2016. You and I have been talking about this quite a bit, that I see this as a very similar model year to 2016 when it comes to the corn especially. And so it may be longer rather than shorter. However, having said that, Todd, like 2016, I think the answer maybe will rest in the basis levels. We've got very wide basis in a lot of these areas that Pro Farmer came out with a lower yield. And I think if Pro Farmer and my estimates are more accurate than USDA's, you'll start to see the end users start to come in and buy more and protect more of the long side and get some more grain purchased. We went 3 over on spot corn here in Atchison at Bartlett Grain on Friday for near quick ship delivery. That said something to me that the commercial is out there hunting for old crop corn right now. So I think watch your basis levels and really play that hard if you're in one of those regions that is close to a deficit area where basis and corn may have to be pulled into your area or into another area from your area. So hedge to arrives maybe would be something to think about this fall for off the combine sales, and then lock in the basis as you get ready to deliver. That may be a very viable way to go.
Hey, thanks, Mike.
Have a great weekend, Todd. Thank you.
Mike Zuzlow is with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Let's check on this Friday afternoon the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass. He's at Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Good afternoon to you, Eric. Thanks for being here for the day. Let's start with the hurricanes, and then we'll move into what the hell that might or might not mean across the rest of the growing seasons and regions on the planet.
Yeah, there's actually 4 areas I'm watching. 3 are in the Atlantic, and 1 is actually in the Pacific. And if I can, I'll start in the Pacific. We have Hurricane Genevieve, who's rapidly dissipating in strength, but it will be moving up toward the coast of California over the next 4 or 5 days. And as it does so, it's interesting. Some of the models are actually pulling the smoke over those horrendous fires in California into the circulation that's left over from Genevieve. And as a result, it's not only going to be blowing that smoke to the east toward us, but also to the west out into the Pacific Ocean. But the bigger story, I think, is going to be what's coming out of the Caribbean today. That would be Tropical Depression number 14, and then also Tropical Depression number 13, which is sitting just to the east of the Lesser Antilles. From yesterday to today, the latest model updates suggest that both of these systems by next Tuesday will be in the Gulf. One will be near Florida, the other will be near Texas and Louisiana, and both are anticipated to come into the Gulf Coast states. And as a result, we're expecting heavy rainfall. What's uncertain in that part of the country is how strong they're going to be at this point. Before, there was not much indication that we would say they would be above tropical storm in strength. Now, this morning, the Hurricane Center is saying, hey, latest model runs plus the lack of some wind shear and better moisture suggest that they might get up to hurricane strength, which if they both do form, that will give us letter L and letter M, which would already put us 3 weeks before the climatological average, we'd already be put past normal on a hurricane season. And we still have, like I said, September 10th is the peak of the hurricane season. So we still have all of September and October to go through, which are very active. So this very hyperactive season is something that we're going to be concerned about. Now, just for corn, soybeans, you know, and stuff like that, this is not going to be a major deal in the near term with these next 2 systems, but they're going to be coming into the Gulf Coast, and we're going to watch it carefully.
Yeah, it's really wild. I made note yesterday, you mentioned the smoke, that Don Day, who joins us on Tuesdays in this slot, had posted on Twitter that it was smoke in Cheyenne, Wyoming, where he's located, across that part of the world already, and that they were... I'm not going to say cloudy, but they had enough smoke that it really was making a difference in that part of the world. Now, right here in our part of the world, what do the 2 weeks look like this week and next?
Well, the 2 weeks coming up to this point, right, the first 21 days of the month, we have resisted heat, right? So it's been cool around here. So despite the fact that we've been dry, I mean, we haven't had much precip here in Illinois other than some scattered storms, what, a week ago. And then after that, pretty dry. Well, we haven't had much. And the forecast is going to keep much of the stormier activity in the northern Corn Belt, maybe through parts of the Great Lakes states, and then into Canada. So when I look out, while I do see chances of scattered storms over the next 7 days, nothing impressive coming through to really increase those chances. I am watching a cold front next, what would it be, next Wednesday, Thursday coming through the northern plains that might get here. But outside of that, we're relatively dry in the near term.
Do the models differ for week two? I think you told me that might be the case.
Yeah. So, you know, temperatures after we've been pretty cool as of late are going to start to climb back up again. So we're going to go back up into the mid to upper 80s, and parts of the Corn Belt are even going to crack into the 90s again. And through the next 10 days, there's pretty good evidence that we're going to knock down that huge ridge that's over the west, bring in some relief of the heat west, and start to push it toward us here in the midsection of the United States. Well, what's problematic for us is that when we get out to day 11 through 15 in the forecast, remember, these global models we use, their operational and their ensembles go out 15 or 16 days. So when we look at that 11 to 15 day time period, we've been watching a trend where the European model is advancing this deeper trough farther to the east, and the GFS is leaving it back over the northwest. Well, what's the difference? If the GFS has its way, we're hot as we finish August and start September. If the European has its way, we're 5 degrees cooler than average. And in both situations, it's kind of odd because it wouldn't make sense, but it does. Both situations were stormy. So it looks as though the end of August going into the very beginning of September is going to feature more thunderstorm activity, which means we could go and finish off these beans and this corn with some good late season rain.
It feels a little early to be on this kind of roller coaster ride as it relates to the models and the temperatures. It feels more like, I don't know, late September as opposed to late August, I guess. Kind of odd. And is there a reason for that to be the case?
Well, the North Pacific is unblocked. It's been unblocked for a while. And this La Nina is kind of waxing and waning with its strength. And at the same time, the MJO just keeps on the move. So nothing is really setting up to get things stagnant in the flow of the atmosphere. And as a result, we're getting more regular weather systems. And that's important because we move toward harvest. At this point, one of the things I'm watching most carefully is the La Nina. A week ago, I would have said, it's really struggling. I don't know if it's going to get going. And now I'm like, well, there's better indications that we could have weak La Nina through September and October and even into November, which would mean a warmer and drier finish to our growing season, which a lot of us would love, dry that crop down in the field, not have rain interrupting things like it did in 18 and in 19. So this would be overall a more favorable look moving forward. But too many, I think, balls up in the air, too many wild cards. And the biggest one, of course, would be hurricanes.
Now turn your attention to South America. They'll begin their planting season really soon now.
Yeah, so it turns out that Rio Grande do Sul, the farthest southern state in Brazil, the government allows them to start planting corn now, and they just got some rain. So that's about the only place where they put in a full season corn crop, kind of more widespread. But remember, full season corn is only about 20% of the total corn crop. What I'm more concerned about is the fact that we've seen consistent model forecasts keeping much drier than average conditions around through the month of September to early October for like Mato Grosso, Mato Grosso do Sul, Tocantins, Bahia, Minas Gerais, that area. And that's the place where if the monsoon arrives early, they aggressively plant soybeans so that they can get them in early, and that allows them to get the safrinha crop in early. What it looks like this year is no aggressive early season planting coming out of South America. So that's going to be, I think, an important point moving forward. And the big question will be, do we actually move them over to a delay? So not just no early, but is there going to be a delay because of the drier conditions? Oh, and by the way, they're not going to go after planting that crop down in Rio Grande do Sul too quickly because we're expecting a frost and possibly even some snowflakes down there. So remember, it is still their winter in that part of the world. So it's just when they open up the floodgates and allow them to start to think about planting, but Mother Nature is going to put things on hold a little bit.
As always, thank you so much. It was very interesting today.
Yeah, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. On this Friday afternoon, we're joined again by Brian Grady. He's the editor of the Pro Farmer newsletter and has been busily tabulating all of the Crop Scout reports to put together the Pro Farmer official national estimate from the report. reports that have been received. Thanks, Brian, for being with us. I know that this is different and varies from what the state numbers look like, even by state, I think. Can you tell me about how you finished up and what the numbers look like for corn and soybeans, please?
Yeah, our the Pro Farmer National corn yield came in at 177.5, and we estimate the crop at 14.82 billion bushels. Now, we put a plus or minus 1% on that. So the range on the yield would be 175.7 to 179.3. And the range on the production would be 14.672 to 14.968 billion bushels. On soybeans, the national production estimate from Pro Farmer is 4.362 billion bushels, with a yield of 52.5 bushels per acre, plus or minus 2% on soybeans, and a yield range of 51.5 to 53.6 bushels per acre, and a production range from 4.275 billion bushels to 4.449 billion bushels.
I think we'll start with the soybeans because there's less to talk about there. Your average yield below what USDA has in their August number, but still, it's a big number for soybeans, correct?
Absolutely. It would be a record, but down from what USDA estimated on August 1. We're concerned with the dryness out there in many of the areas that's developed, and so we pulled it back some, but the pods are definitely there. Huge factory, yield factories out there right now, if the crop can get the late season rains. And that's always the case, but it's especially the case this year. There's a lot to gain or a lot to lose in the soybean crop based on how it finishes. So as we sit here right now in the third week of August, we backed it down some from where USDA was on August 1, just under the assumption that we think that it isn't finishing real strong right now at this point, and that the dryness is a concern.
Is dryness a concern across the bulk of the seven states that the tour made its way through?
Yeah, I would say that South Dakota is probably the exception on what we saw on tour. Southern Minnesota is probably the exception there. Iowa's growing drought concern because of what was in the western portion of the state has spread into the eastern portion of the state. And it was dry pretty much across all the other states as we went across the Corn Belt this week.
What did Iowa's numbers look like, and which weighed heavier, the derecho or the drought?
Well, I think ultimately the drought has probably the broader scope on impact. The derecho, we don't really know. I mean, we tried to make an estimate there. We did reduce Iowa's harvested acres by 300,000. And we cut total harvested acres for the United States by 525,000 acres. So in addition to the, and that's on corn, in addition to the reduction in harvested acres, we also pulled the yield down. So you can take some out of both. You can take it all out of one or all out of the other one, but you can't take big chunks out of both of those. And that's just understanding the process of how it works.
So your 177.5 national average yield for corn is way off from where USDA is at, or at least was on the survey in August at 181.8. How much do you think USDA will find once they start to put their numbers together for September?
Well, it's going to take more than September. This is a monthly process for them, and it's probably going to take until the January final production report to really get a grasp on everything, to be honest with you. You know, USDA will start its objective yield surveys with farm plots in September and then continue those on through harvest. But we anticipate that this is probably going to be one of those years where it moves around quite a bit month to month with the estimates from USDA.
Anything else from the report that you released at 1:30 today that we should know about?
You know, no, we go through and we put yields on the states, but really it's the national number that drives it. And then we go back and work backwards. So we get to where we want to be on the national number, and then we make the adjustments we need state to state to get us to that point. And that's the same process that USDA goes through. And it's really the easiest and only viable way of doing that process. If you start with each state and build it from there, it becomes very difficult to get to the national number.
Through the week, there was a lot of discussion, and there always is, about the difference between the USDA numbers and what the crop scouts historically find. So, for instance, the easy one is the 15 bushels less in Nebraska because you have more non-irrigated land than irrigated land than in your survey than USDA would be taking into account. However, there is a difference in other states. So you're generally, what, about 6 bushels short in Iowa? And I'm not sure why that's the case.
I'm not sure exactly either. I just know that that's the historical, and we use those numbers. Those historicals go back to 2001. We also use more recent historicals when we're putting together the Pro Farmer numbers. So we look at the three-year trend and the five-year trend as well. And that helps us to get to those numbers, there's no doubt. But the published numbers are back to 2001 that we release throughout the week of Crop Tour. That's where we have historical data back to has been all correlated and synced up together.
Hey, thanks so much, and we appreciate you spending so much time with us here at Will Ag all week long.
You bet, Todd. Thank you.
That's Brian Grady. He is the editor of the Pro Farmer newsletter and spent the week on the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour and gave us an update of what those numbers look like. You can find them at profarmer.com or visit our website at willag.org.
From the Illinois State Water Survey at the University of Illinois Prairie Research Institute, this is Illinois State Climatologist Trent Ford. Average temperatures this last week were in the low to mid-70s across the state, near average for this time of the year in northern Illinois, and 1 to 2 degrees below average in central and southern Illinois. No stations in Illinois recorded daily high temperatures in the 90s this last week, and several stations observed low temperatures in the low to mid-50s. August temperatures to date are 1 to 4 degrees below average, with the largest departures in southwest and south-central Illinois. This is in contrast to warmer than normal weather in both June and July. Most of the state remained relatively dry this last week, with the highest 7-day totals remaining less than half an inch. August to date, precipitation has a very strong north-to-south gradient, with the northern half of the state experiencing a 1 to 2-inch rainfall deficit, and southern Illinois experiencing a 1 to 3-inch precipitation surplus since August 1st. Rainfall patterns for summer are very similar. The northern half of the state is between 75 and 100% of normal summer-to-date rainfall, while areas of southern and southeast Illinois have experienced between 150 and 200% of normal summer rainfall. Looking ahead, short-term forecasts show the heat and humidity return early next week. However, most of the state is expected to receive less than half an inch of rain over the next 7 days. The more seasonable dry weather will be welcome in the wettest parts of southern Illinois, but will intensify pre-existing dryness in northern and northwestern Illinois. Hopefully, any dry-related impacts in northern Illinois are short-lived because the 8 to 14-day outlooks from the Climate Prediction Center show the highest odds of near-normal temperature, but elevated odds of above-normal precipitation to begin the month of September. The most recent outlook for September as a whole shows equal chance of above-normal and below-normal temperatures and precipitation. However, the outlook for fall suggests warmer-than-normal conditions with equal chances of above- and below-normal rainfall. This is Illinois State Climatologist Trent Ford wishing everyone a happy, healthy weekend.
And I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Thank you for joining us here on the Closing Market Report for this Friday afternoon. Do visit our website, willag.org. There you'll find all of the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour information detailed, including state breakdowns and crop reporting district breakdowns for all 7 states. Also, don't forget to sign up for the Farm Doc Daily webinar series that kicked off this past week, and you can go to the archives and catch up on them. On Tuesday, we'll discuss farmland prices. You can sign up at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu in the webinars section.